Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of the Boxing Science Podcast. My name's Danny Wilson, and in this episode I'm going to be answering your questions around a range of different subjects around physical preparation in boxing. I'm going to be answering questions around strength conditioning for kickboxing, managing training loads around amateur boxing and university competitions. We're also going to be looking at loading strategies for the trap bar jumps, looking at neck training, and also my advice to any up and coming personal trainer or strength conditioning coach that's looking to do something similar to boxing science. Before we kick on with the questions, hit that subscribe button, hit the like button so you don't miss out on any future content. And let's kick on with this week's questions. First question is from YouTube, Linus Gustafsson. And it's a very good question around how I would adapt my strength conditioning methods in boxing for a kickboxer. Something we get asked quite a lot, how I'd adapt to mixed martial arts. So it's good to kind of get a different sport in here, kickboxing. The first thing that I would do is look at the lower body. That's the main thing that I would change. There's a load of different things that I change from an individual perspective. I'd get them in for testing and look at how they're moving, look at their jump profiles, their strength profiles. But really, if I'm looking at it from like kind of a bird's eye point of view, I'd be looking at, let's look at the lower body training stimulus. In boxing, the legs are important. Lower body impulse is important, but the legs are quite fixed in position, just requiring that rapid hip extension and rotation. I'm not looking to like kind of stress a single limb through an intense range of motion like you would do when you're performing a kick in kickboxing. So you'd be looking at isolating the lower body, maybe doing some more single leg exercises, kind of looking at developing the quads and developing the hamstrings in isolation. So let's start off with the hamstrings. What I would start incorporating is stuff like single leg isometric hamstring bridges, Nordic falls, isometric Nordic holds, glute ham raises, stuff to condition the hamstring muscle just because of that kind of that rapid kind of knee extension and working towards them long ranges of motion. The hamstrings are under a lot of strain. You need them for obviously that elasticity to create that kicking power, but also you need it to protect the muscle so you're not getting any hamstring injuries. We do this at Boxing Science for our boxers, but we do it as part of a warm-up, protect the hamstrings for like the high-speed running sessions. So do it more as a preparation exercise rather than a foundational exercise, rather than a key exercise to develop strength of the lower body. We more look at increasing that rate of force development through squats and deadlifts, increase lower body impulse. But in kickboxing, you need a lot more than that. So that's one area. You're looking at high knee extension forces. So you'd be looking to probably isolate the quads, looking to do more leg extension work, looking at isometric work, and maybe looking at trying to isolate the quads a little bit more to protect that knee from injury, but also to be able to kick harder. So yeah, that's a very quick stop tour on how I'd adapt the program. I would be looking at the individual, looking at their movement patterns, but that's probably the key thing that I would be looking at. Changing lower body exercises. I still include squats and deadlifts, but have more emphasis as well on them isolated lower body and single leg exercises. Okay, another question from YouTube, Cremidis has asked, what are the top three things you see amateur boxers do wrong compared to pro boxers in their S&C, and how do you fix them? So it's pretty hard for me to say like a pro boxer do this, an amateur boxer do that. I've seen a lot of amateur boxers actually prepare a lot better for competition than pro boxers would. So what I would do is not compare them to pro boxers, but just say amateur boxing in general, some of the key mistakes that I see happening in terms of preparation for competition. The first one would be incorporating strength conditioning into their programs at an early age. So something that I mentioned many times across various platforms of Boxing Science, whether that's on Instagram, on our articles at boxingscience.co.uk, and on the YouTube channel as well, and most recently in a podcast episode, is that strength conditioning needs to be better in youth training for boxing. There's a lot of barriers of incorporating strength conditioning in an amateur boxing gym, like coach education, you know, are the coaches knowledgeable around strength conditioning in boxing? Time, logistics, amateur boxers are probably at work, at school, at college, or whatever they're doing in the day. You know, they're probably only training once a day in front of their coach. Facilities, is one thing. Not many amateur boxing gyms have the facilities to create a strength and conditioning program and funding as well. Obviously, it costs money to get a strength and conditioning coach on board, a qualified one at that. There's lots of different restrictions and limitations in place for strength and conditioning to be a big part of an athlete's athletic development as they're going from 10, 12, 14 up towards the late teenage years. This may be not a mistake from an amateur boxer's point of view, but more of amateur boxing in general. There needs to be something in place at a youth level to make sure that strength and conditioning is made available. And this is something that we're quite passionate about at Boxing Science. This is why we do the Youth Athlete Initiative. We go to regional sessions and we're performing testing batteries to give them feedback, giving them very basic exercises that they can do at home or at the gym. And also, we do a lot of stuff on YouTube around amateur boxing and how to incorporate strength and conditioning within amateur boxing sessions. There's a link in the description for our most popular amateur boxing video where I talk about how to incorporate a full strength and conditioning program in a training week for amateur boxers. So if you're interested in that, go check that out. Incorporating strength and conditioning from an earlier age rather than waiting until they're senior and that they can afford to get a strength and conditioning coach on board. There needs to be something in place first, so that's developed all the way through the amateur boxing career. So the second one is weight management. Making sure that they're in the right weight category, making sure they're staying quite close to that weight category limit as well, making sure that they're not cutting too much to make the weight because you haven't got that time to refuel when you're on a club tour or anything like that. You've only got a handful of hours to be able to refuel, rehydrate and perform to the best of your ability. Also, that weighing is like later on in the day. A lot of amateur shows are done at night. So you're weighing in at 6, 7 o'clock and then performing at 10, 11 o'clock. That's going to take a lot out of you. You're needing to manage your weight for club shows, but also for championships as well. So many times I see amateur boxers when they cut down to the weight for a championship bout on the first day, then they fuel up for their fight, and then after they're skipping the weight off. And this can take a lot out of you and take a lot out of your performance, especially when you're going over a 3 or 5 day competition. So two key things to try and restrict this is to make sure that you're, one, selecting the right weight category for you, making sure that you're getting a body composition analysis that can tell you what your fat-free mass is, what your lean mass is, to make sure that you know that you're not restricting yourself too much to get to a weight category, not just guessing, oh, it looks like an 81 kilo boxer or a 75 kilo boxer. You know exactly what weight that you should be at based on like kind of nutritional evidence. So you're not restricting yourself too much. That's a key thing. And then when you get that weight category right, it's making sure that you're staying within like around about 5% of that body mass all year round because you're not wanting to cut too much down to that weight. Selecting the right weight category and making sure that you're staying around that weight category all the way through the year, then that's the right thing to do in terms of like managing your weight around amateur boxing. The third mistake I'd say would be around conditioning. A lot of pro boxers still do. Probably in pro boxing, obviously you're looking at 10, 12 round competitions, a lot lower pace than amateur boxing. So you could see a professional boxer's kind of justifications for doing like kind of longer intervals or kind of maybe going for long steady state runs, working on their endurance. In amateur boxing, you're looking at three minute rounds, really high pace bouts. So if you're going out on a long road run or going for long intervals, this isn't meeting the demands of the sport. That's a key kind of mistake that I'd see, is that seeing a lot of kind of amateur boxers going out for long road runs. It's not meeting the fitness demands of the sport. What I would say is to do shorter intervals, high intensity interval training. I'd be looking to split up the intervals. So instead of like going for 4 minutes on, 2 minutes off, be looking to do Tabatas, 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off times eight, or even doing 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off. And this is like matching them high intensity bursts that you're likely to see in amateur boxing bout. And also working on them high-intensity adaptations and red zone adaptations at the same time. A classic session that we do with amateur boxing is 3 minutes on, 1 minute off, and we do either 3 or 4 rounds. And within that 3 minutes, we split that up into 15-second intervals. And this is a fantastic way to replicate the demands of amateur boxing. So I've got a question from Ali Mahfood. I have university games after a few weeks. It's going to be 8 bouts within 10 days. What to do in these 10 days to avoid tiredness and losing stamina? First of all the best. Obviously, you've got to go through these 8 bouts in 10 days. Sounds like an intense competition, so all the best in that. It's hard to say from a scientific point of view because there won't be that much research around amateur boxing and intense competition in terms of like keeping up fitness and reducing that tiredness. The main challenge that you have, especially if you're going through 10 days of competition, the bouts obviously take a lot out of you in terms of like adrenaline and obviously getting hit and the physical exertion that you have. But you obviously lose a training stimulus there because if you're boxing 3 3-minute rounds, you're only doing 9 minutes of kind of intense activity. So in the days off that you have from not boxing, obviously 8 out of 10 days, you're going to have a day off. I'd be saying like to do a recovery session, maybe some shadow boxing on the bike, get a heart rate monitor on to make sure that your heart rate's not going too high. Keep that body awake. I know it sounds really non-scientific, but I'd be looking to just keep that body moving. And also from a weight making perspective as well, that keeps the weight down. Also within them 10 days, you can look at like recovery strategies. So looking at like contrast shower, hot and cold. If you've got access to a sauna, going into that for some heat therapy, obviously making sure that you stay hydrated during that as well. A 20-minute sauna, something like that. Access to a massage or soft tissue release on a foam roller. All stuff to try and manage that recovery as best as you can. Nutrition is a key factor. Within the 10 days, making sure that you have a plan in place, making sure you have meals prepared. Many times I've been to amateur boxing competitions and a boxer hasn't ate for 2, 3, 4 hours after competition because they haven't got things prepared there and then. They're then going out into the city and trying to find somewhere to eat. Just making sure that you organise the right nutrition and supplementation to make sure that you're reducing any kind of soreness, inflammation, and also fatigue that's associated with the bouts. Now, talking about nutrition, it's not only about what you're doing within the 10 days, but it's also what you do before that. If you're cutting weight down to meet that weight category in that first day, and then you fuel up for the bout, win, hopefully, and then you're having to skip off weight the next day and making sure that you can't refuel in the right way, this is really, really going to affect that soreness, that fatigue, subsequently your performance going into the next bounce. Approach the competition by trying to get down to that weight category, making sure that you're not cutting down too much, making sure that you're not dehydrating yourself, to make sure that you can attack the competition day in, day out without really worrying about the weight. So maybe come in about 0.5 kilos below. You might think that you're giving your opponent some advantage, but if you can get the right nutritional strategy, carb up, fuel up, ready to go into that bout, you put on the weight, no worries, but also you won't put on too much weight. You're going to be affected the next day and having to cut down the next day and skipping your breakfast and everything like that. So yeah, definitely be looking at making sure that you get the right nutritional strategies leading into competition, nutritional strategies within the competition to make sure that you're fueling and refueling in the right way, but also looking at like recovery strategies, so contrast showers, sauna, and also like massage therapy as well. Also managing your training as well, making sure you're getting some recovery sessions in there, whether that's shadow boxing, cycling, a low intensity run as well. Question from Sesh111. How do you manage S&C for in competition season? For example, I have 4 competitions separated by 1 to 3 weeks at a time over 2 months. I can imagine contrast training with overcoming isometrics would be very useful when away from home with limited equipment. You've almost answered your own question there because I think that I'd agree with that. Overcoming isometrics, contrast training, looking at kind of speed, strength, activity. It's definitely something that I'd be looking to do. Other things is like loaded jumps. Don't know what access you have to equipment, but maybe some like dumbbell jumps, trap bar jumps, something like that. The main thing is to structure your loading right. So making sure that you're not understimulating all the time and making sure that you're peaking at the right time as well. So if you've got a period of separated about 1 to 3 weeks, when is your heavy loading session going to come? So that's what I'd probably say. Main thing as well is looking at like kind of mobility and core training to making sure that you're staying loose and fresh and injury free when you're going through intense periods of competition. Got another question from YouTube. This one's from Randall Wood. How many sets and reps for the trap bar jump? So it'd be 3 to 5 repetitions over 3 to 4 sets. So the main thing that I consider with trap bar jumps is the loading. A lot of boxers and athletes, what I see across like social media and different videos, often underload their loaded jumps. We look to load it up around about 30 to 50% of their one rep max due to our data that suggests that peak rate force development and peak impulse occurs around these percentage of one rep maxes, and it's highly individualized. But the key thing that we'd look at is the speed. Now, obviously, we've got the VBT devices, such as the GymAware, that we can get our boxers going between 1.2 and 1.4 meters per second on their trap bar jumps. We know that we're optimizing impulse and rate of force development when performing these speeds. If you don't have access to this, you can just simply use the MyJump app and look to try and get your athlete performing around about 50% of their maximum jump height. So if their counter movement jump height or their unloaded jump height is around about 40 centimeters, you'd be looking to jump with the weight load around about 20 centimeters. And this is what we find as the general rule of thumb to match them peak impulse and peak rate of force development scores. So if you're performing trap bar jumps, first of all, find out what your peak jump height is, unloaded jump height, and then look to try and find the optimal load for you, because it's very, very individualized. This might be 30% one rep max, it might be 50% one rep max, but all we're looking for is that 50% of their unloaded jump height. A question on YouTube, are your boxers able to do cardio power on a bag? I mean, how long it would take for them to get to maximum heart rate and then keep it for 60 seconds? Is that even doable on the bag? Doing like kind of high intensity bursts and maybe looking towards that maximum heart rate, it'd be very, very difficult to perform this with 60 second intervals, because the intensity that they'd have to perform at would be quite difficult. Massive spikes in muscular acidosis that will create muscular fatigue, and this will affect the kind of like that heart rate response. So when looking at kind of cardiovascular and central adaptations whilst performing boxing activity, what would do is look to intervals of 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, or 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off, making sure that you've got a real intense burst followed by like a period of like not total rest, but where you're just moving around, moving your feet, working on single high intensity bouts of exercise would be power shots, 4-shot combinations, make sure you're getting that speed, power and intent to raise that heart rate towards 90%, 95% of their maximum heart rate. Struggling with this in terms of boxing activity, you can do filler exercises, spike the heart rate, so you could match up like power shots or 4-shot combinations on the bags. In between this, you could be doing burpees, mountain climbers, running on the spot to try and elevate the heart rate in a non-boxing specific point of view, just looking at that physical response to get the heart rate up to 90%, 95% of maximum heart rate, then follow up with some intense boxing activity. Great question from YouTube. Any advice for a new coach / personal trainer starting out and unsure what direction they'd like to go in with their coaching? How and when did you know you wanted to specialise? So I like the fact that it's gone from a quite generic to a specific question around about kind of my career, my development, because it's hard for me to say exactly what somebody should do, because there's no right or wrong answer. So the best thing that I can do is use the example of myself. And the first thing is not specialising too early on. Obviously, I'm known for the work that I do in boxing, but I've worked in many different sports, such as football, rugby league, rugby union, worked in volleyball and a lot of collegiate sports, worked in university settings. So that opened me up to a lot of different sports. And also I had a 5 or 6 years experience of working in golf as well. So even though it looks like I've been a specialist and looked to go down this specialist route for all this time, I've actually got a lot of different experiences in different places. So my main advice would be to stay open. Obviously, have your specialist route that you want to go down if you've got a passion in boxing or kickboxing, MMA, or even a different sport like golf or rugby. Open yourself up to different sports, because also there's a lot of things that can be learned. I've learned a lot of stuff working with golfers, especially working with golf coaches, and then that made me into a better practitioner in boxing. Keep your options open, making sure that you do a lot of voluntary internships, looking to shadow as many different strength and conditioning coaches in different sports as you can, looking at different opportunities in different sports, become a generalist before you become a specialist. Okay, that's the end of the episode. Thank you very much for either watching or listening to the Boxing Science Podcast. It's much appreciated. I'm enjoying doing these episodes. Some fantastic questions today. Got a heap load of more questions, so I'll have to save them for another episode. If you're wanting your questions answered in the next episode of Boxing Science Podcast, please leave them in the comment box below. If you're not a subscriber yet, hit the subscribe button. If you like this content, hit the like button, or can you give us a rating on Apple or Spotify podcasts? It helps a lot with the growth of the channel. Q&A episodes have been fantastic so far, getting a fantastic response, and I'm wanting to do more and more and expand the podcast even further. So thank you very much for watching and listening. Hopefully see you on the next episode of the Boxing Science Podcast.